can actually figure out a way to eject and achieve what I call financial escape velocity from the system. And Bitcoin is a real way that you can do it.
I need an orange-pilled financial advisor because I have to fire mine. He just told me to sell all my Bitcoin and that this is too high risk for me. And
it does not make sense to me that you could, that somebody could be a financial advisor and ignore the best performing asset in all of human history over almost two decades now.
I have about 10 Bitcoin just sitting on Binance, and he's like, why should I take self-custody? I'm like, well, if something ever happens to Binance, like, there goes your Bitcoin.
It's not like anything could ever happen to Binance, right? It's
of
like,
course not. There's nothing.
CZ wasn't like going to jail or anything. Yeah. Like, you know, we haven't had any other exchanges, just fucking shit hit the fan and everything's done.
Servers would never be seized. There'd never be any theft. We're safe just leaving everything on an exchange, of course.
It became pretty obvious that as humans, custody is what we're used to. We've been doing this for hundreds and hundreds of years, so this is a completely new concept to a lot of people. While I advocate for custody, self-custody, I think everybody probably should do that. I would also say that if somebody's interested in Bitcoin, to not be afraid of doing it. If custody is the first way you need to do it, then by all means, do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then learn about it as you go.
Yeah.
The whole system is designed in a way that makes it very difficult to escape. The United States money supply increases basically all the time and will never stop, has to. We live in a fractional reserve, debt-based economy.
Inflation is this tax that's stolen in the depth of night and nobody understands
it. You've been lied to your entire life and you would rather just stop there and look the other way and think that everything is just still perfectly fine.
Down a rabbit hole. Down. Cypherpunk.
Welcome back to another episode of Cypherpunked, where we explore money's history, crypto's future, and Web3's role in advancing human rights, freedom, and digital liberty. Today, we've got a full roundtable. We're joined by Chantel Lilycrop-Kostiuk and Riley Combs from Bitcoin Well, a company on a mission to make self-custody the default. And we're also joined by Alex Danzik, a combat veteran and former gold fund manager who has helped family offices acquire over $1 billion in Bitcoin. Welcome, guys.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, happy to be back.
Yeah, I always like to have a nice roundtable. Just like always, different opinions and viewpoints and thoughts. I think it's always fun. What's up, Alex? Welcome, man.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
So you got a new show now, too? Tell me about this.
So the Bitcoin Crucible is what we're calling it. That comes from, so back when we used to do the Cafe Bitcoin, sometimes we used to call it the Crucible because we would get a bunch of people in there and we'd take a bunch of ideas. A crucible, you know, in the gold world is where you stick something and you burn it like really hot, right? And what comes out is pure metal. You're removing all the dross metal and all the impurities from it, right? So the idea there is you take a topic and you put it through this crucible and everybody tortures it and hopefully at the end of it.
Sounds like being a Bitcoiner.
Absolutely. Absolutely. hopefully what comes out on the other end is the truth, right? And that's the kind of the idea.
Wow. Very cool. Well, I'm definitely gonna check out your new show, man. It's funny you mentioned Cafe Bitcoin because I think 3 or 4 years ago, there was the Family Office Symposium here in Naples.
Yep.
I think it was like me, Greg Foss, and Stephen Lubka from Swan. And we came into Cafe Bitcoin. And that's like the last time we talked, which is kind of cool. That was like, I think, the first spaces I've ever done. I've never been in a spaces or thing like that before.
Yeah. Yeah. Good times, man. We had a lot of fun for sure.
What'd you guys think about the symposium yesterday?
I love the diverse opinions, but one of the things I thought was really crazy is how you're still seeing people that are managing such significant portions of wealth and they're completely dismissing Bitcoin.
When it's crazy, isn't it?
Opinions of, no, this is still too risky. This is too volatile. I would allocate 0% and that's too much. That's insane to me. How irresponsible is that we're not exposing people, especially wealth managers, or if we're how are we not trying to truthfully preserve our wealth with the most sound money that's available?
Yeah. And just to add on that, for the people who are managing a lot of wealth and are above 0% allocation, the ones that are just completely fine with just having it at a custodian. And so actually during your guys' panel, I was at a table and I could kind of hear some people talking while it was going and then talk to those individuals afterwards. And he was like, yeah, I have about 10 Bitcoin just sitting on Binance. And he's like, why should I take self-custody? I'm like, well, if something ever happens to Binance, like, there goes your Bitcoin.
It's not like anything could ever happen to Binance, yeah. Right? It's like,
it's not. There's nothing.
CZ wasn't like going to jail or anything. Yeah. Like, you know, we haven't had any other exchanges just fucking shit hit the fan and everything's done. Right. So yeah.
That would never happen. I mean, servers would never be seized. There'd never be any theft. We're safe just leaving everything on an exchange, of course.
Or the OG dude, what's his name? Mark Karpeles from, why am I blocking on the very first Bitcoin OG exchange? Mount Gox.
Yeah.
He's over there swinging his toy sword while people are fucking taking hundreds of billions of fucking Bitcoin, yeah. Dollars worth of Bitcoin. It's crazy.
Self-custody
is super important.
I will also say that, like, I can understand where some of these folks are coming from. Absolutely. Like, there's a spectrum out there, and I think we're at a point now where, because we're starting to see so much new interest, and granted, there's lots of people who still have their questions and whatnot, but I do think there's a lot of people who are just comfortable with custody. I'm not saying one thing or another as far as whether doing self-custody is bad or not. I personally do self-custody. I think it's smart, and I like that route, right? But I, you know, after spending 4 years at Swan and talking to thousands and thousands of high net worth, and in some cases, I mean, extremely wealthy individuals, it became pretty obvious that, you know, as humans, custody is what we're used to.
Mm-hmm.
We've been doing this for hundreds and hundreds of years. So this is a completely new concept to a lot of people. And a lot of people are just not super comfortable with it. So while I advocate for custody, self-custody, I think everybody probably should do that. I would also say that if somebody's interested in Bitcoin, to not be afraid of doing it, like, absolutely do it. If custody is the first way you need to do it, then by all means, do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then learn about it as you go.
That's kind of the path I've always taken so far with my meetup group. People coming in, they have no price exposure. They don't understand. And they come to our meetup. And the first thing I say is just, you know, dollar cost average and buy a little bit. Like, whatever that amount is for you, could be $10 a week, could be $100, could be $10,000. I don't know.
Sure.
Whatever that number is, just, you know, go on Coinbase. That's historically what I've told my people to do, and just buy a little bit. Right. And then when you feel like that's a lot of money to you, when you're like, you see the value go up over years, and you're like, that's a lot, that, like, that would suck for me if I lost that, then come talk to me and we'll learn about self-custody.
Sure.
Or if you're interested in self-custody, come talk to me and we can do that. But I think you raise a very valid point. And I think self-custody is super important, but there is also a risk that does come with self-custody, right? You have to be responsible for yourself. You have that self-sovereignty. And I think it is important that you take that risk and learn how to do that and learn how to be self-sovereign. But even myself, like, not all of my assets are self-custodied. I have a diversified portfolio where the majority is self-custodied, but I leave some in, you know, an ETF, and I leave some over here, and I leave some a little bit on an exchange, and I've got some in a hot wallet, et cetera, right? You know, if they rob me, they can have the hot wallet, you know?
No, I do agree with that. And to your point, my opinion is starting to morph a little bit and think and understand that, you know, self-custody is a spectrum. Custody in itself is a spectrum. Mm-hmm. But I still, to play devil's advocate, will not ever suggest that somebody should leave the vast majority of their coins on an exchange.
Agreed.
If you want to leave some because that's what you're comfortable with, sure. But I would rather sit down and teach you how to self-custody safely or create some redundancy. There's a lot of good collaborative custody partners right now, too, where you can still be majority key holder. But that way, if you do lose a key, there's a fail-safe. There's a backup for you. However, they cannot move the coins without your permission.
Well, I think what you guys are doing at Bitcoin Well is super cool. Like, it's just right out the gate, you know, the person comes and you kind of educate and teach that. You know, that's what I've been doing for years with people that come to our meetups. Yeah. But, you know, now I can push that off on you guys. Good luck. Have fun.
Can't wait.
A lot of great questions two nights ago.
Yeah. That was great to have you guys there, by the way. And I think another aspect of the custody issue that you brought up in one of your slides, which is super interesting that we didn't get a chance to, I didn't want to confuse all the people there. So I didn't really like go too hard on this. I kind of just sat there and shut up, but we can talk about it on this one, is the situation where Coinbase is now custodying for so many different ETFs, so many different institutions. And the thought that I had about this is actually a regulatory failure, that Coinbase is the only, you know, entity that feels comfortable even doing that, because they've made the traditional custodians that are heavily regulated, which if you're a custodian for, you know, other people's assets, I think you're a, you know, a trusted third party. You should be heavily regulated, right?
Yeah.
So like a bank or institutions that have been doing this for, like you said, decades or centuries even, you know, those institutions should be heavily regulated. They're custodying other people's assets. And I think it's been a failure in our industry at large that we haven't had that regulatory clarity. And it's been intentional by the regulators to not give that clarity, to not actually provide regulation where regulation needs to be, which is entrusted third parties. And now we have the situation where Coinbase is the primary custodian for essentially most of like 90% of these ETFs. That's a problem. And I think we should talk about that. And then hopefully banks and other institutions that are heavily regulated will come into the space to act as custodians to diversify that risk. And I think largely the government has been the problem there because they haven't allowed that to happen. Yeah. Which has put a lot of different people at risk when it comes to FTX and all these other exchange failures that have occurred.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, prior to the current administration, there was a great deal of pushback against the industry in general. You know, there was a lot of people in government basically saying that, you know, it's only used by criminals, so on and so forth, the typical FUD, right? And I agree, the regulatory landscape was very kind of unclear. And that's what prevented, I think, a lot of institutional interest in the space. Since then, it's become a lot more clear, and I think there's a lot of intentions right now for it to become even more clear. I've seen regulators several times over, I want to say the last year or so, say that it's okay, right? So I think at the end of the day, right now, we're at a space where you're going to start to see banks probably doing this soon-ish. I think they're just nervous. I'm guessing when I say that, I think they're just nervous. And this is one of the reasons why I think Coinbase has got the lion's share of that kind of institutional custody, is because they have this reputation for doing it. They're trusted for doing it. Mm-hmm. Do I think it's a good idea that it's all consolidated in Coinbase? No, I don't think that's a very good idea. However, I think the liability of doing it is something that a lot of these older, more traditional institutions are a little concerned about. And that's also kind of one of the biggest, opportunities, really, because in the traditional world, I just feel like they don't have that many people who actually understand this stuff.
Mm, you're not wrong.
Yep. And so it provides us this window where it's like, we need to now be ambassadors and bridge this chasm of knowledge, bridge the knowledge gap, mm-hmm. so to speak, and start to help bringing all of these different institutional and traditional players more up to speed. And by doing that, I think that will help a little bit, hopefully.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think it is maybe our moral duty to start helping them as well, because I think if they're not learning from Bitcoiners, what's going to happen is you're going to start applying fiat principles to Bitcoin. Mm. And we need to make sure that we're leveraging the Bitcoin technology and the Bitcoin ethos and still helping integrate it into finance, but doing that in a safe and secure way and not just replicating the exact same problem that we've already had. I think if we have to start engaging in the conversation with them and just opening up the door, and sometimes that can be difficult because a lot of Bitcoiners are fighting so hard against the financial institutions. And so we have to be a little bit more open and say, hey, you know what? This is an opportunity to completely reshape the future of finance. Mm-hmm. And if we don't have the ability or we don't have the desire to start working collaboratively with them, something is going to go awry.
Yeah. No, you guys are raising some great points. What are your thoughts, Riley?
Well, I was just going to say, going back to Alex's point a little bit ago, not only are these investors, high net worth individuals, creatures of habit when it comes to custody and how like mm-hmm. they're completely fine leaving their assets at a third party, these banks are too, of course. Mm-hmm. And for them, it's, I think to Chantel's point, it's like we need to at least meet them in the middle and have the proper people in the room so they're not applying fiat principles to Bitcoin. Because at some point, they're gonna want to stop losing revenue to Coinbase. Mm-hmm. It's just taking time for them to build out the proper business units within their banking institution to allow, you know, people to buy and sell Bitcoin, or, you know, also do custody as well. But also, you know, like I said, being in the same room with these individuals when they are developing all of this infrastructure, to also make sure that when someone does buy a JPMorgan Chase, mm-hmm. They can also remove that Bitcoin off of JP Morgan Chase.
Right. Yeah. I think what you're describing is, you know, for so long, you know, obviously I'm a cypherpunk. We all care about privacy. We all care about freedom. But, you know, we're approaching a stage where, you know, there a lot of people are getting involved in Bitcoin. We want people to, of course, continue to get involved in Bitcoin. We don't want them to get burned, right? We want to teach them about self-custody, but obviously that's not realistic for every scenario, right? Each individual should for sure have a self-custody plan, have some Bitcoin, but also potentially there have some that's in a certain structure of a trust or an IRA or something mm-hmm. where they need to have it custodied.
Yeah.
Let's make sure that, you know, we educate people about the risks about that and also about opportunities and ways to make sure that that's safe and done properly.
Yeah. And that's why I really,
not like at Mt. Gox or FTX or anything like that.
Yeah. And that's why I really applaud institutions like Fidelity,
who have Fidelity's making some big moves in the space.
Yeah. Like they've not only been paying attention for a really long time, but they built everything the correct way. Or why I applaud exchanges who maybe aren't necessarily non-custodial, but they're custodial, but they have proof of reserves. And I think, you know, that kind of, or are like ourselves being non-custodial, it's like you can kind of be a leader in that fact and others, you know, maybe potentially following you, but like there are various different paths that people can follow.
I thought it was so interesting yesterday to see like just the melds of the two worlds of the TradFi. And then obviously a lot of us Bitcoiners being there was like, you know, like you described, some people said 0% is too much allocation. Like these people have billions of dollars under management.
That was the Merrill Lynch guy, right?
His name is Sam. He's actually a buddy of mine. I used to play cards with him.
Yeah.
So I know him. So we talked afterwards. I'm like, you need to watch it because his panel was right before mine. I'm like, you need to come watch the next, I'm doing the next panel for you, big guy.
Yeah. That was so funny. It's great.
I'm going to get him in here and I'm going to try to orange pill him.
So Grant Cardone was on my panel yesterday. And like when he came in there, I came in and I said hi to him.
I was going
to
ask you about
this. He was listening to that. He was like, gosh, has it been this negative all day? It's like, is this what we're walking into? And I'm like, no.
So you,
it's all good.
Oh man.
Pretty funny.
Did you have, was McGlone on your panel? Mike McGlone?
No.
That was the panel right before.
I had CJ and Constantinos and I had, John Devine, I had Jay Bose,
yeah. Actually, just had lunch with Jay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, So then, whose panel was McGlone on? He was a character too, Mike McGlone. Did you see what he said?
No.
He's like, Bitcoin was a buy at 5,000.
No, that was Bobby. I'm going to mess up his last name. He's
Bobby Iacino.
Yeah,
Bobby,
that's him. Really cool guy.
Bobby's cool too. I orange pulled him on here. He was like, oh, you know, Bitcoiners are so mean to me. I'm like, you know, yeah, that's how they are.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm not going to buy Bitcoin until they stop being mean. I'm like, come on, bro. They're never going to stop being mean.
I talked to him. It was really funny.
He's a cool dude, man. He's really cool.
Yeah, he was something along the lines of, you just don't get it, you boomer. Something like that. Yes. He's like, yeah.
And it's just tough love, right? Like you don't want to see someone, you know, do something incorrectly and get burned by that.
Well, the main issue that I see with people is a lot of the FUD and the myth debunking is like, you know, they're saying things that they're talking about areas of where they don't have expertise in technically.
For sure.
And they're saying things that just don't make sense.
Right.
And just like, if you technically understand the situation, you're like, hey, what, like, and that's what I told Bobby, he was talking about the code and all this stuff. And I walked him through, I said, look, like, you know, this is open source code. So he's talking about what if there's a bug? And I was explaining, hey, like, you know, a lot of companies, they have closed source stuff. And that's why, you know, bugs, they go undetected and then they get, you know, somebody sneaks in. But if you have something that's open source and that's people have been looking at it, and everybody can see for decades at a time, you know what I mean? Then you can view every little potential attack surface and you can try to attack it and make it stronger, right? If there's a problem, you can fix it. And that's literally the story of Bitcoin and other open source. It's why free and open source projects are so powerful. It's this idea of the cathedral and the bazaar, right?
It's that, but on top of that, it's kind of like you look at projects like Linux, which Linux started out as this operating system that Linus Torvalds created and it was open source. It was like anybody can work on it. And now that has become kind of
the standard.
It's enterprise infrastructure globally, right? And there's many different versions of it, so on and so forth. But the difference between Linux, for example, and Bitcoin is that with Bitcoin, people have massive amounts of wealth stored in it. Mm-hmm. So if you're a software engineer and you've got like
a way to get in there,
massive amount of wealth stored in this
trillions of dollars on the tax surface.
What kind of incentive do you have to make sure that this code is absolutely copacetic? Like, right, this thing has probably been inspected by software engineers at a precise microscopic scale.
Oh, it has
because of the incentives.
Yep.
unlike anything we've ever seen before.
I can't remember what book I read, but the intro was about this. I think Peter Thiel wrote the foreword, and he talked about how he hired like the best hacker in the world to come after Bitcoin and look at it.
Sure.
And the guy who looked at it was like, oh my God, this is incredible. This is unbelievable. Like, he just, like, you know.
Well, think about the hacking prize, right? Like, what do you win? It's worth $2.5 trillion.
Yeah. So that's a pretty big, you know, black hat hacker reward right there. Yeah. To skim some of the bounty off that. But, you know, yeah, I mean, this thing has stood the test of time. So when people say things like, you know, it's just code and the code can be hacked, it's like, it just doesn't make sense, right? You have to understand technically what's happening. You have to talk to developers. You have to talk to people who are experts in that area, right? It's like me opining about quantum physics when I'm not a physicist and just making some statement and saying like, oh, this is all bullshit, you know? Sure. I don't know anything about it. I haven't talked about it, you know?
It's insane how loud people are willing to be on a topic that they have no idea.
It blows my mind. You watch.
People scream about it. Like, you literally don't understand the basic concepts right now. Why don't we just have a conversation and then, you know what, let me teach you. Or there's so many different Bitcoiners in the community that will help you learn.
Sure.
But don't yell about something that is incorrect.
Yeah. Or it's like the meme, Bitcoin is useless. And it's like, all right, well, give me one for free.
It's like, oh, man, just. Like, you know, there's so many politicians like that. Elizabeth Warren always comes to mind. I mean, like, people talk so passionately about something they're so uneducated on and they're so wrong on. It's like, it blows my mind the amount of, like, the level of hubris you have to be somebody like that. Yeah.
But also there's human incentives involved in all kinds of things, right? So a lot of times you do find people who just don't understand it, right? But a lot of times they don't understand it because they're financially incentivized to not understand it.
Yes.
Right. So that's a thing too.
Yeah. I
trying to think of the quote. There's a great quote like that. It's hard for a man to understand something when his livelihood depends on him not understanding it. It's correct. Some kind of famous quote.
Correct. Like, that was one of the things, or that's one of the things that used to be happening with financial advisors. It's like, well, why would I advise my client on Bitcoin when I'm not incentivized to be able to sell Bitcoin to them? If I'm incentivized by AUM and Bitcoin doesn't fit into my portfolio, I'm not going to start to talk to people about it, and especially self-custody Bitcoin.
But what I don't understand is Bitcoin is the best performing asset in all of human history. If you had advised your clients to buy Bitcoin, you would have exponentially more AUM under management. You know, that's what, like, doesn't make sense.
So this is all true. But the flip side of that is that, like, Bitcoin's got this crazy compound annual growth rate, right? It's like, it's crushing,
like 70% or something.
It depends upon what time frame you measure it over. But, like, it's basically crushing every other asset, essentially, in the history of the world. It's destroying absolutely everything. And if it's as simple as you just buy Bitcoin and you hold it, I mean, technically that's very disruptive if you're a financial advisor and your work relies upon people relying upon you for advice. If it's really so simple as just buy Bitcoin and wait, right?
Where do you fit in the market anymore?
Right. It's kind of like, you know, it's like, okay.
That's just advice. I mean, if somebody gave me that advice, you know, years ago that I didn't know, I mean, I'd be very thankful they did. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, they deserve their 1% fee. Yeah.
If you're the guy that's driving the wagon, right? You have a wagon and wooden wheels and a bunch of horses and you're like, yeah. Those cars are ridiculous. You don't need those. Yeah. It's kind of like that.
It is. Absolutely. Why would you advocate for something that's going to disrupt your industry or disrupt your life?
Yeah.
You spoke about something interesting. You talked about the CAGR. What did you guys think of Michael Saylor's speech yesterday at the symposium? Like, what was your...
Man, I thought it was fantastic.
You thought it was fantastic?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. I mean, I guess there was nothing too surprising in there.
Yeah.
But it was good, especially for that audience. Mm-hmm. A lot of people
haven't necessarily
heard him speak before.
Yeah. I think, like, listening to Saylor is always amazing. He's a very brilliant person, of course. And so, it was great to see him in person and to see him in such a small audience as well.
I talked to Kareem Mauji, who, like, was up there with him talking. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I actually had Tom Luongo in here, and Tom is, like, I don't know if you guys have met Tom, but he's fascinating. He's got, like, such a cool dude.
I listened to that entire episode.
Oh my God. He's so interesting. and you know, it was like, I have my notes here in front of me, And like, we spoke for like 3.5 hours and like, I didn't even get to ask like the very first question. After like 3.5 hours, like, all right, Tom, I got to ask my first question.
Yeah. You're like, I'm not kidding.
Like, I'm not even kidding right now. And, you know, he's got an awesome like group of fans. They love him. So really cool. But I told Kareem, I was like, that's like how my interview with Tom was. It was like, you were up there, you said 3 sentences and you know, you didn't even get to ask any of your questions. He got like one question off and Sailor's just like, you know, the man just riffed. He killed it.
Yeah. I did appreciate that he had him kind of break down the 30%.
That's what I was going to ask you guys about. So that's what I was getting to is what do you, I don't know if he fully, in my mind, I didn't think Sailor fully unpacked that. No. I think he kind of just like went around it a little bit, which is, you know, obviously it's hard to explain every little detail, but I think he's just averaging it out. But yeah, it's been, you know, 100% for a long time, then 70%, then 50%, 60%. And now he's saying 30, which my guess is what data is he using to get that? Why does he think that way? Is he just looking at the previous history? I mean, do you guys have any other insights there on that?
I have an opinion.
Oh, let's hear it. Let's hear it, Alex.
I don't have an insight as to why he was saying it was 30%, but I do have some thoughts on why I think it will continue to go up basically forever. And it's really math, right? Mm. It's there's 21 million fixed units. It's the first asset the human race has ever seen that's fixed. It's the first asset with an absolute,
absolute scarcity,
right? And people go, well, you know, real estate's scarce and gold is scarce and all that other kind of stuff. And it's like, look, every asset in the history of man responds to human demand for more of it. If you want more gold, if the price of gold goes up to 8,000, then we're going to dig more gold out of the ground. We're going to start getting gold out of the bottom of the ocean. We're going to get as the
price
of
gold. We're going,
right? Yeah. Like,
you know, wait till they figure out about land getting inflated by 100% when we land on Mars.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Start building fucking HOAs on Mars.
Yeah.
You know, so
no dogs allowed on the side of them on the road.
So there's that. Plus, there's three other components. One is that the United States money supply increases basically all the time and will never stop, has to. We live in a fractional reserve debt-based economy. They can't allow it to go backwards. So that's why they target a 2% rate of inflation with personal. I think it's insane because what that means mathematically is that like every 35 years or so, your purchasing power gets cut in half. So if you live to 70 years old, it happens to you twice in your lifetime. Whoever thought that was a good idea. I can't believe they convinced everyone.
I mean, the craziest thing is like the worst possible advice you can give somebody is like, you know, yes, take your fiat, put it in a savings account and leave it there.
It's mind blowing.
You like, and that's literally what's advised by the educational system and teach people how to save and like, just save in these, you know, massively inflationary currency units that we're just printing out of fucking thin air.
So there's two more parts of that. The second part is that like, because of that, we all buy assets as human beings that we probably wouldn't buy otherwise. And that goes for everything. Stocks, bonds, all
housing. Housing's the problem right now.
All the things, right? So I would argue that is not a free market. That's a manipulated market where people are buying stuff they probably wouldn't have bought otherwise. Now that we have this pure, pristine asset with an absolute inflation rate of zero, to me, what that really means is that all of these other assets globally, I'm talking like $900+ trillion worth of assets, now has to reset against Bitcoin. And then the final reason, so that's a big pool of capital that needs to basically reevaluate, right? The last part, though, is that if we just go back to basic first principles, where does wealth even come from? Wealth comes from humans, our effort, our work, right? And as long as humans are alive, we're going to continue to produce more wealth. And if that's all divided by 21 million forever, that means the price has to go up.
You sound like my friend Knut Svanholm. Everything divided by 21 million.
That's where I got that from.
He's a good guy.
Fuck, he's a good guy. Smart dude.
Smart as fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, Paul, when are we going to release our series with Knut? All right, we got to get that out because there's some good knowledge in there. We did one of the series on one of his books. So everything divided by 21 million. So it's going to be good.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure Sailor broke down. I don't think it was Vegas. I think it was Bitcoin Nashville that he broke it down. And I think it's actually technically 29. And I think it's by like the year 2035 or 2048, something like that. So, but he has a clear breakdown as to how he determined.
So he has math and stuff that he's figured out.
Yeah, which it's like, well, if you've done it before,
gotcha.
It would
have
been nice to share in a room like that.
Yeah, no.
He was running out of time.
So I mean, I wanted to ask, like, I think Mike McGlone was up there. He's like, yeah, we're at, you know, Bitcoin has to go down. We're at 100,000 now. I told people to buy it at 5,000 and now it's like, I'm out, right? It's like, obviously he like just missed the whole fundamental understanding of what Bitcoin is, but like, I didn't have time, but I wanted to ask him. I was going to say, hey, listen, like, you know, right now Bitcoin's market cap is 2 trillion, like roughly 2 trillion. Gold's market cap is roughly 30 trillion. Cars, collectibles, art, roughly 30 trillion. Stocks, equities, roughly 150 to 200 trillion. Real estate, roughly $400 trillion. Bonds, people buying government debt, you know, $300 trillion. I'm missing something here. Real estate? We got equity. People just sitting on cash in a bank account, a savings account, getting nothing. $130 to $150 trillion there. The derivatives markets. I think Chris Sullivan was on the other day with us. That was with you and me. We were talking before the panel. That wasn't public, but he's like, I got my quantitative models and, you know, it's telling me the derivatives market is somewhere between 1.5 and 2 quadrillion.
Yes.
So like right now, Bitcoin is like a tenth of a percent of all of the, you know, capital in the world. And you think like we're going down from here and not up, like just blows my mind. So I wanted to like put him on the spot and just blow his fucking mind, but I didn't get a chance to ask all that. So I'm asking you guys here, what do you guys think about that? Mic drop.
the whole thing about it, guys like that are like, they're thinking of it like a trading mindset.
Yes.
I think, you know, you see people like this all the time where they're like, okay, well, I was this person back in 2017.
Yeah.
You know, I bought, it had just gone over 1,000 an ounce and I was like, huh, this is interesting. It's going to run. I bought some. Sold at the end of that year. It went up to like 18 and a half or something like that. And I thought I was an absolute genius. I was an idiot, but I didn't know that then. Yeah. And what ends up happening to people who do this is that they sell all their Bitcoin. Then Bitcoin, maybe there is a correction. So what? But it's going to go up way higher. Are they going to be able to buy that dip? Probably not. Most people who do this end up,
they want to feel psychologically like they made the right decision.
They made the right call as a trader, into US dollar terms. Yeah. But what ends up happening is they never buy their Bitcoin back.
Yeah. And they turn sour.
And those become the people who really criticize Bitcoin the most. This is what I've learned, is the people who dislike Bitcoin the most were people who had a bunch of Bitcoin. They traded it. They lost it. They never got it back. And then it went up exponentially higher, and now they're salty. I mean, I see this
really,
all the time.
That's such a good viewpoint, and it's so true. If people understood that we need to look at Bitcoin less as an investment and more of a savings technology.
That's my that's why I started the Bitcoin meetup here locally. That's why we do the meetup. Like, that's why I try to teach people. Right now we talked about the Bitcoin army. So we got people joining there, and I joined that group. I thought it was cool. I think you just dropped the link in there. Hopefully some of them are watching this and learning from it.
What's up, Bitcoin Army?
How's it going, Bitcoin Army? But like, that's what I try to get through to people, is stop thinking with the fiat mindset. Understand what this technology is, that, you know, you're incredibly early. It's going to change everything, essentially. And, you know, don't think of it as a trade, right? It's like that quote. It's like, by the time you want to sell your Bitcoin, you won't have to. That's the way I think about it.
Yeah.
And too many people, because you're still thinking of it as an investment, when you start to try to time the market, you always end up missing your opportunity because you're letting your emotions guide your behavior. And you're like, oh, Bitcoin's going to go down. And then even if it does, if you would have just gotten into the market, you would end up just preserving your wealth for a longer period of time. But how do you guys think that we start teaching more people that to think less of Bitcoin as an investment and more so of Bitcoin as a savings technology? Like, what is going to start resonating with people?
I think it's just the mindset switch of changing your unit of account, right? And this is what I describe in both private and professional conversations, is don't think about, oh, you know, I bought one Bitcoin at X price and now, you know, today it's another price. It's like, you have more sats or Bitcoin today than you did a week ago, a month ago, a year ago, and start thinking in Satoshi, start thinking in Bitcoins. And that's how to approach it. Because again, the denominator does not change. It is only 21 million. So
fascinating. What's some of the biggest hurdles you guys have had, obviously, with you bringing on new customers, new clients, people buying Bitcoin? What's like the biggest issue you have onboarding them? And also with you, you've helped a lot of family offices acquire Bitcoin. So is a lot of them don't understand self-custody, or what's your biggest hurdle there?
I think one of the biggest hurdles is sometimes people come to us and they know that they need to self-custody, but they start off way too extreme. They start off from a place of fear and they're like, I need to remove all of my assets from the bank. I need to buy or convert everything into Bitcoin. put it in a hard or complex hardware wallet going with mm-hmm. like cold card, maybe when they've never even set up a wallet before. Mm-hmm. I love the product, but for a brand new person, it can be extremely overwhelming.
Yeah.
And then going to the point of, I need to start running a node. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. let's start small. Let's set up a hot wallet. Let's do a small test transaction. Let's get you comfortable there. And then we can start migrating all of your assets into Bitcoin, into self-custody. But people get scared. They want to move everything. They want to have the most secure setup possible, which obviously you can graduate to. But your Bitcoin, everybody's in a Bitcoin journey, and you have to start small. You can't start panicking and then start thinking, I need to run a node right from the beginning. Because in that scenario, you're honestly at higher risk of locking yourself out of your Bitcoin.
Or on the opposite end of the spectrum, it's the people that are overwhelmed by all those details, where then they keep themselves from actually buying the Bitcoin in the first place.
I agree with that. I think the most important step is to just get some Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Right. You can learn custody. You can learn all this stuff as you go, but it's like, if you are just paralyzed into not doing it, like you're missing it. That's where you're missing it.
There's a famous quote. It's like, you know, history is decided and built by the man in the arena. You have to be in the arena. You know what I mean? Something along those lines.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is this is the reason why traders get hurt so badly is because all the gains in Bitcoin, most 80%+ of the gains typically will come within 15 or less days each year in Bitcoin. Right. So what that really means is if you are out of the market, you're not holding Bitcoin for those 15 days, you've lost 80%+ of the gains in Bitcoin that year. Mm-hmm.
Time in the market beats time in the market.
Right. You know? So stop trying to figure out when those 15 days are. I don't know anybody who knows how to figure out what those 15 days are. And I've talked to thousands of people who've traded Bitcoin. None of them, like I'm talking about guys who, there's so many stories of people who came in and like, they tried to be smarter than, I call it being smarter than the price of Bitcoin. They tried to trade it. And they just ended up with less Bitcoin than they started with. Yeah. And this happens over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. It's like, look, don't trade it. Just buy it and sit on it. Just wait.
Yeah. Allocation matches conviction. And just as you go, there are ways where you can just level up over time. But you don't have to just immediately jump into, you know, multi-sig with your keys distributed between, you know, three different countries or what. Like, yeah, like it's slow and steady wins the race.
Yeah. I mean, with our curated mining partners who are, you know, we're doing large mining deployments with, we kind of bring them in and teach them how to use like a ledger or hardware wallet. And we kind of walk them through the cold. But we have got one investor now that's, you know, he wants to do three multi-sig and do all sorts of stuff. And, you know, we'll do whatever they want. We'll help them with it. You know what I mean? But, you know, maybe the place to start is, you know, with, you know, either a hot wallet or a, you know, like a ledger, a popular hardware wallet to.
One of my favorite things to do with people that are new to self-custody is just get them to download Blue Wallet to start. Let's get comfortable with the process of writing down a seed phrase. What is a seed phrase? How are we going to...
Do you guys have your own wallet? I was doing some research and it said that in Canada, you guys have a an app that you can download for a wallet. Is that true or no?
On our website, it said that? I don't think so.
AI hallucinates sometimes. I was having Grokalina go do some research.
Oh.
And she came back with that. She's like, yeah, Bitcoin Well has a Well wallet that you can download, but it has geo-locked to Canada.
No, you know what? We used to have a wallet years ago. Okay. Yes. Yeah. So it didn't lie to you. No, we don't anymore.
Shout out to Grok. Good job, Elon. You crushed it. Live on X, baby. You guys are knocking it out of the park.
No, we are like hardware agnostic, essentially. So you can use any wallet. We'll send you, all we need from you is your public address.
I'm a huge fan of the Aqua wallet. I want to reach out to them. So they're not sponsoring me, but they should, because I would chill the hell out of
them. Okay, wait. Explain this a little bit, if you don't mind. Why are you a fan of Aqua?
Because I love how you can have, like main chain, and then you can quickly bridge to Lightning within the wallet. And then, you know, you can go like, so I like have my little spending account. I've got my, you know, my hot wallet on the main layer, but like I can just move like $1,000 over. And if I need to spend, I can use it. You know, if we go to Stake and Shake for our meetups. And I just love the simplicity of that, like built into one device. I love how they're building out this card they have now where you can have like a debit card and you can swipe it and it figures out in the back end how to like, you know, convert it and make it simple for people. They have like a Bitcoin merchant thing in there. It's like, it's pretty fucking cool. And they also have, if you need stable coins for something, they have like USDT built into it, I believe. So pretty fucking cool. The best, I haven't seen a better experience that with a Bitcoin wallet. Personally, that's my opinion. Simplified Lightning, took all the complex stuff out of it. You know, all the the stuff that makes it difficult to use. This is just my personal opinion and experience having used Blue Wallet and some of these other wallets. You know, I haven't used Blue Wallet recently, so I don't know how their experience is now. But when I started using Aqua, I was like, oh, this is fucking cool. This is like, it's just, you know, it's the same thing with Ledger, with the hardware devices that they've recently come out with. And they're not sponsoring me either, but they fucking should, because it feels like that fucking Apple moment. You know, it feels like that moment of like having to help so many people with hardware devices, right? Where it's like, I got fucking Mima and she's like, I can't see the numbers, you know, and you're doing the little thing. And, you know, and then boom, they've got this beautiful touchscreen now where you can like, you know, the battery lasts forever. It's like one of those like Nook type of screens, and, you know, it scrambles the numbers on the pad. So it's like, you have to actually remember this. Just like the little nuances, the little touches. And it's like, it's almost like that iPhone moment. That's how I felt, where it's like, oh, this is fucking going to go mainstream. Like, this is the moment where it just makes it so much easier for me to walk people through cold storage. I mean, like, that's just my genuine, honest, unpaid opinion about
the difference. Yeah, well, that's needed. I'm glad to hear that. That's actually what's been needed for a long time, is something that's simple.
And I felt the same way when I got the Aqua, and I downloaded Aqua and I started using it, and I was like, oh my God, like, hey, I want to go pay for stuff. I can just bridge over, you know, spending, and then boom, use Lightning. And then if I want to have the security of the main chain, I can bridge back and forth. I mean, it's just like, this is like, it's like that was like that eureka moment, you know?
Very cool.
That is really cool. On our website as well, or on our platform, we do free swaps. So essentially, if you're holding your Bitcoin in a hot wallet, on-chain Bitcoin in a hot wallet, then you can just swap for free into Lightning and we'll send it to you as well. Because a lot of wallets do charge every time that you're switching between. And so ours is completely free.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, I don't even mind paying a little fee. I think it's cool. You know what I mean? Maybe that's a way for a wallet app to monetize. But I think what you guys are doing is fucking pretty sweet. But like, to be able to do that yourself within the wallet, to just go back and forth, like, I hadn't experienced that. It's always been a pain to try to bridge to Lightning and figure it out. Like, Aqua just made it like super simplistic and easy, and like, you don't have to worry about it. It's just like, oh, bridge from main chain to Lightning, press a couple clicks, it's done. Oh, right. there's your sats on Lightning. Boom, go spend. Pretty cool. So yeah, that's my thought there. I'm going to change topics a little bit here. What do you guys think about the Samurai development situation that's going on? I mean, I saw that and I'm shocked here. I cannot believe that this is happening.
5 years. That is absolutely insane.
I guess it was just some Mima, 80-year-old Obama appointed judge or something that just threw the book. The guy, he pled guilty and they threw the book at him. It's like, it seems like another Charlie situation, you know, another situation, another Ross situation. It's like, what the hell is going on here? Hopefully Trump comes out and pardons this developer, because we just can't have this type of shit. My opinion is, you can't have this type of shit happening in the U.S. We have to protect developers. We have to protect freedom of speech. We have to protect privacy. It's just unacceptable.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. It's a direct attack, really, on freedom. And unfortunately, you know, that and this is just an opinion, but that kind of stuff probably shouldn't be happening in America. This is supposed to be the land of the free, home of the brave, right? And if you have people who, first of all, the premise behind all of that is that if you're private in your transactions with another human being, somehow that's like illegal. And that's a really scary concept, because
part of the reason I started this show called Cypherpunk is to debunk what you just said. Yeah, to make it show it, you know what I mean? To teach people, because everyone's like, oh, I don't care about privacy. You know, I'm like, okay, we'll take your clothes off, walk around naked. Oh, all of a sudden I care about privacy. Oh, all of a sudden it matters.
Yeah. Well, I mean, privacy is a basic human right, you know, and it's like a lot of times you'll see this effort that's being made by certain, it's not everyone, but certain people want to make it seem like if you want privacy, you're somehow a bad person. There's nothing wrong with privacy.
Privacy is the right to selectively reveal yourself to the world. There's a quote.
Yeah.
OG Cypherpunk quote.
And this is like a basic thing. Like, as human beings, we should be able to deal with each other without the permission of another human being. Like, as soon as you have to ask another human being's permission really to do anything, I mean, should that even really be happening? I'm not sure that it should. So, this idea that they're throwing the book at these guys, it's not a great precedent. They're really just trying to make an example. What they're really doing, in my opinion, is saying, if you create privacy tools, you're a bad person and you should go to prison. Like, I don't think that's right.
Yeah. And code of speech. And so it's a very slippery slope there as well. And, I saw like the news like break during, I think it was the Vault, keynote before lunch. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was just like very disheartening to see. And hopefully there's a lot of Bitcoiners in the ears of this, you know, Trump administration. So hopefully it's fixed quick. And it's not something where, you know, they are getting, you know, just rotting in jail for a couple of years and then it finally mm-hmm. happens.
Yeah. No doubt.
Yeah. I don't understand how we still have to have this conversation. Why are we putting a developer in jail for literally just protecting our own human rights and our right of privacy? Mm-hmm. I think thankfully the administration right now is obviously proven to be helping people in these scenarios. And so, like you said, hopefully it's not a couple of years until he's able to get out, and hopefully this will be resolved as soon as possible. But mm-hmm. we can't let this be a precedent. We have to start speaking up. I mean, I'm not from the United States, so my voice might not have a lot of power.
Mm-hmm. But you're a human.
Yeah, but
you're a human. And you can go like this is right and this is not right, just from a human moral perspective. Mm-hmm. Like, no, there's nothing wrong with privacy.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with privacy, and we can't be putting people in jail because they're preserving that right.
Yeah. I mean, the argument that you hear a lot is just so ridiculously absurd, where it's like, hey, you know, it's like shutting down the internet because bad people say things bad on the internet or do bad things on the internet. It's like, obviously the majority of people are good people and do good things. We can't punish everybody because a couple people are bad, right? I mean, there's always going to be evil in the world.
You know what it comes down to is this is basically moat keeping behavior. Mm-hmm. So this is a behavior that the traditional systems are trying to use to moat keep their situation. And there's this guy that I've recently started following on Twitter. I recommend everybody check this guy out. Fernando Nicolic. All right. He's the founder of BTC Perception. He worked at Universal Music during the torrents disruption phase of the music industry. He's an ex-VP at Blockstream. But he's got this pinned tweet where he talks about this process that
What's his name? Let's give him a shout out.
Fernando Nicolic.
Yeah, okay.
Fernando. Okay, I found him, yeah.
Yeah, so he talks about this process by which there's phases that incumbents in industries go through. And he watched this play out. He saw it happen, right? And he's like, he basically said, look, what's happening with torrents, this is feedback. We should be taking this as feedback and adjust our business plan. Adjust the way we do business. Mm-hmm. They fired him for it, right? But eventually they embraced the industry. And if you follow what this guy, the kind of stuff this guy is talking about, it makes a lot of sense. But the playbook goes deny it first, then mock it, mm-hmm. then try to regulate the crap out of it so it doesn't actually happen. That's where we are right now, right? That's still happening, even though the current administration mm-hmm. is very pro.
I mean, maybe I'm being naive here, but I still think maybe this is just isn't on Trump's radar. And this is kind of like a niche Bitcoiner type thing, but
yeah, possibly.
I mean,
this is a natural response of the existing system. Because if you think about what we're really talking about here, we're talking about a complete disruption to the traditional model of finance. You're talking about peer-to-peer finance, peer-to-peer economics, peer-to-peer transactions, which disintermediates a lot of very powerful people who are used to being in control. Right. So this is all the marbles. This is the way Larry Lepard looks at it. It's like, look, if you look at the way central banking works, you look at the way all of it works. That is a massive.
He does not give up.
Isn't he great?
So I moderated this. I don't want to interrupt your thought. Finish your thought and I'll tell you.
I was just saying, it's just a massive, massive system of control. They're used to being in control and they don't want to lose control. Therefore, they're going to fight against it. And this is all moat keeping behaviors.
So, I just moderated a panel in DC and I'm actually after this call, I'm going to text Joe Gruters, who's the chairman of the RNC. I know he, and I'm going to send him this thing we're talking about right now about the samurai devs and put it to him so he can, you know, think about it, at least put it on Trump's radar, hopefully to pardon these guys. So we're going to do this panel and Larry's on the panel, Charlie's on the panel, CJ's on the panel, and Joe Gruters is on the panel, and it was a fantastic panel. It was a really good speech or a good discussion we had. But I threw in there a question about like KYC AML, you know, like why, what do you think about KYC AML? Is this right to basically treat everybody as a criminal, right? Like to create all this friction that like solves, I mean, obviously you all probably know my opinion, which is it solves it. 99% of the crime still happens. It doesn't do anything. It just creates a massive regulatory burden and a massive honeypot for people's information that
absolutely
these institutions and people have no right knowing. They shouldn't have no right having all this information on people that, of course, is going to get hacked by scammers and result in a lot more human suffering with a massive cost. And there's no way for these government programs to even check if they actually work, because most of them don't. So all that being said, I'm teeing up this question. I'm like, who wants this fucking question? You know?
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, you know, I got this. I can't do that. I can't do this. And fucking Larry's like, fuck it. I'll do it. Give it to me. And he knocked it out of the fucking park. I love it.
That's great.
So it was awesome. Yeah. Really, really cool conversation and panel. Oh, but yeah, so changing direction a little bit here. What's next? What's on the agenda for the rest of the year for Bitcoin? Well, what are you guys working on?
What we're working on right now is looking at, so in Canada, we are, what we're trying to build at Bitcoin Well is the ability to replace your bank with Bitcoin and with our services. And so the next step in the process for us is essentially implementing a backend that will give our customers the ability to fully go without a bank. So they can get paid in Bitcoin. They can essentially send their paycheck directly to our platform. And then they'll have the ability to auto convert a portion into Bitcoin. We'll send it directly to them. And then they can interact with the fiat balance on their platform or on the account itself. We're also looking at additional international expansion for us. Mm-hmm. And then building out the services for our Bitcoin All Infinite division, which is our large transactions division, where we provide white glove service for any of our higher net worth customers. And so I think one of the things that I'm really excited to start looking at is different lending partners. It's a massive opportunity right now. People looking to, one of the things that people are looking to do is to be able to take out fiat loans on their Bitcoin and then buy more Bitcoin with it. And so we really are interested.
I might have a partner for you guys. I just had lunch with Jay, who was on your panel, and he's now opened up Private Key Capital in El Salvador, and they're also, I think, going to have a branch in West Palm Beach here. So, you know, they're looking to do stuff like that.
Please make the introduction.
All right, we will.
Yeah.
We absolutely will. Very cool.
Yeah, and then from my perspective, really just goes down to relationship building, whether that be our internal clients, or, you know, kind of more like business development opportunities and being able to establish direct relationships with financial advisors, accountants, just because either Chantel or I can provide that sort of service. And so I always tell clients, it's like, we can kind of plug into your overall financial picture and work as your Bitcoin advisor, along with your existing financial advisor or your accountant or whatever. But if your accountant or your financial advisor is not very knowledgeable or supportive of Bitcoin,
which is the case 95%+ of the time.
Exactly. It's like we can make the proper formal handoffs and introduce these individuals to these accountants and these financial professionals.
Okay. Very cool. Working. Leslie wanted your personal cell phone number. I hope that was okay. I gave that to her. So she's going to call you nonstop until you respond.
Perfect.
Alex, what's up with you, man? What's going on? What do we got on the agenda?
Just something to your point is that more and more, I think, financial advisors, et cetera, are becoming more curious. They're having to. Forced to, because their clients are asking them.
Yeah, absolutely. We were just at a conference, 2 weeks ago now in Denver, the Bitcoin for Financial Services Summit, and it was all financial advisors or CPAs that are looking at learning more about Bitcoin because they know that it's coming. Well, it's already here, but they know that if they don't start learning and start advising their clients, they're going to be lost. And so it was amazing to be in that room of people. I think one of the favorite things that I heard there was a financial advisor that tells people that you should be 85% allocated to Bitcoin in cold storage. Awesome. I was like, that is my favorite thing. And I am going to record this and send this to everybody now.
Very cool.
And that serves as the current advisors who are Bitcoiners as well, like as their competitive advantage. And so that really helps them out. I'm blanking on the second thing I wanted to say.
No, you know what? we hear from clients all the time that are like, I need an orange-pilled financial advisor because I have to fire mine. He just told me to sell all, or he or she just told me to sell all my Bitcoin, and that this is too high risk for me. And
I just, like, it does not make sense to me that you could, that somebody could be a financial advisor and ignore the best performing asset in all of human history over almost two decades now. So like,
I
if
think
you,
a lot of it is they just don't understand it. And a lot of them are afraid of it. Some of them are apathetic and don't care. Some of them don't take it seriously. There's a lot of people who don't take it seriously.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And it scares their, like we were talking about earlier, it kind of, you know, scares them about their current business model as well.
For sure. Cause it's like, potentially an existential threat to their way of, but what I would say, if you're a financial advisor and you're listening to this, go learn about it. Become the guy.
Yeah. Become the guy. Yeah. Get a bunch of new business.
Absolutely.
Because I love Bitcoin. I think you should still own other assets too. I don't think it should put a financial advisor out of business just because Bitcoin is better than everything else, which it is. You know, that's obviously true. You should still be diversified. You should still own maybe real estate. You should still own, you know, maybe a business that you like, or maybe stocks that you like, or you drive a, you know, Tesla. I want to own a Tesla, some Tesla stock. I, you know, drive a Tesla or whatever. Like, you should still invest in other things, you know. Which brings me to my next question. It's like, you know, I still think you should invest in some other interesting alt currencies. You guys might disagree with me. I know I'm going to bring up your quote about ETH right now. Like, you probably still own gold, even though it's a boring pet rock, and I might own some gold too, right? Like, I like to own different things. I own fucking Pokemon cards. You know what I mean? Like, so you said, I don't know if you said this or you retweeted it, but ETH holders now experiencing what it felt like to own gold for 13 years.
Yeah.
So why don't you go ahead and unpack that? Because, you know, I don't know. I was mining ETH when it was like $10. So like, I'm still up pretty
you're
good.
You're still
there.
Doing fine.
I'm still doing okay.
You're doing okay. You know? That doesn't suck probably. but yeah, that's, I was a gold investor for a long time. I used to run a physical gold fund out of Switzerland for 8 years. And, I'm basically what many people would refer to as a Bitcoin maximalist.
Bitcoin maximalist.
Like, I don't own anything else as far as other types of, you know, coins or anything like that. I don't own gold anymore. Very small amount. Mm-hmm. But that's basically zombie apocalypse gold stash. It's not like any significant amount of my portfolio. I'm a big believer in Bitcoin, and I'm pretty much a Bitcoin guy.
Yeah, same with me. Nothing else has outperformed Bitcoin. In when I had a diversified investment portfolio, it was lagging behind.
Well, no doubt. Bitcoin. I mean, nothing has outperformed Bitcoin. So, I mean,
but that's why I don't hold it, because like if I'm trying to create wealth for myself and I have those goals, and why would I hold other assets that aren't going to outperform Bitcoin? And I know that they'll never outperform Bitcoin. And so when we're talking with people, they're like, oh, I want to dabble in altcoins. I'm like, okay, you know, if you're going to dabble in altcoins, then treat it like going to the casino. You might win, but there's a 99% chance that you probably won't. And
most altcoins, definitely. You know, that's why I tell people too, like, it's, you know, you like to play scratch offs, you like to gamble. I mean, you know, there's a lot of that, especially with a lot of these meme coins and stuff like that. I diverge on that Bitcoin is the only asset you should own. And I also think there are other interesting crypto assets and cool stuff happening and stuff that I engage with on those different smart contract platforms that I personally find valuable and have fun doing.
Yeah.
But I just think it's a different thing than Bitcoin as money and as, you know, digital capital, as Saylor would say. Mm-hmm. There's these other things. And he kind of explained it pretty well yesterday that, like, sure, there's going to be these other things, and you don't know what's going to win. And I think that's a great way to like think about it and look at it. And Bitcoin is optimized for this one monetary network problem of being like money for all of humanity.
Yeah.
And then there's this other stuff, and it's definitely going to become more valuable. And who knows which ones are going to be, you know, the most valuable. There's obviously a lot of gambling and speculative bullshit, but, you know, obviously I personally find value in some of the other smart contract platforms, and hopefully they stay there instead of trying to come onto Bitcoin, which, you know, with this whole debate of knots and core and all this stuff is like, why would you do that stuff on Bitcoin? Because you have Ethereum and you have Solana and you have other places where you can do that. And that's what it's optimized for. So I think largely a lot of that stuff is just not going to make financial sense on Bitcoin regardless. So that's my thought.
Right. No, I agree with that. Yeah. I think Saylor was right when he said that there's digital capital and then there's digital, what did you call it? Financialization.
Collectibles and all sorts of different things. Yeah,
sure. And I also agree that they shouldn't change Bitcoin core the way the main net functions. I think I think it does what it does, and it does what it does well. And if we want to add stuff like that, maybe you add it on layer 2, layer 3, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm in agreement. You leave Bitcoin alone. It's doing just fine as it is.
I know you guys got to run soon, so I'm going to ask a final question here. We can just opine a little bit on the macro setup for the rest of the year, and why, you know, markets are going up and going down and stuff happening. What are your thoughts? I think Larry Laporte actually posted this today. I saw it, that he said that it looks like the Fed's going to expand the balance sheet to meet liquidity needs. That's code for probably print a bunch of money, buy a bunch of shit to try to make the prices go up. But then also Jay Powell, when he gave the last, I think, the speech about the rate, and they did the little rate cut, but he kind of said there might not be another rate cut before the end of the year, which kind of, I think, shocked the markets a little bit. People want that cheap, easy money. They want the printers to start being fired up. It sounds like, what do you guys think? What do you think, Alex? Why don't you lead off on this? Cause
sure.
You might have some interesting thoughts.
My view on all of that is that, we're currently in a bit of a correction when it comes to the Bitcoin price in US dollar terms, but it's no different than any other period of time in Bitcoin, right? There have been periods of time where you've seen 20% corrections, 30% corrections. I would even say this is pretty shallow, relatively speaking. If you back the clock up and you look at what previous Bitcoin epochs, so to speak, or cycles,
the volatility is definitely more muted.
This cycle is completely different than anything that came before, right? But if you were to look at previous cycles to see a 50% or even a 70% pullback, that's what happened. Right. And I would say that that may be scary for some people new to Bitcoin, but I was here when Bitcoin went up to 16, 9.5, et cetera, 1,000. And then the very following summer dropped all the way down to 16. And I will say that that whole way I was buying Bitcoin on the way down. Every time it corrects, to me, this is an opportunity to buy more. It's a gift. Mm-hmm. Because
we saw it yesterday at the symposium. There's still a huge information asymmetry.
Information, but also think about the number of how far has Bitcoin actually penetrated the economy and human consciousness. People have heard about it, but how many people actually own it? I'm trying to think of the name of the guy. Was it Lee? Mike Lee? Mark Lee? Anyway, he basically. Tom Lee, thank you. Yeah, he said this thing that's really fascinating. He's 95% of the Bitcoin has already been mined, but 95% of the human race doesn't own it. Mm-hmm. And there'll never be more. I mean? Once that amount is mined, that's it forever. So it's kind of like people who are like, wow, man, I really wish I was smart enough to buy it when it was 1,000 or 10,000 or whatever. Pick your number. That's going to go on forever, right? Yeah. It's like at some point there are going to be people – maybe it's 3, 4, 5 years from now, we're going to be like, man, I should have bought it when it dipped down to 100. I'm such an idiot. I should have just sold all this other garbage, bought a bunch of Bitcoin, but here it is at $1 million and I don't own any.
I haven't met your CEO yet. Adam, I think his name is, but I got to give him a shout out here because he actually had, you guys posted on your page today, the Bitcoin well, and it was him just saying what you're just describing. Yeah. I guess he was saying this the previous cycle. He's like, there's going to be people saying, oh my God, it crashed back down to 100K. It's all over.
Yeah, for sure. Yes.
So got to give him credit where credit's due there. Yeah. So good one, Adam.
I love that guy. Adam, he's a good dude. I like
him. So pretty cool. But do you think the 4-year halving cycle has changed? It's over. Do we have a new wave of adoption here? I think Luke Broyles might have said that retail speculation and retail is kind of largely over, and now we're entering a different era where price moves and you've got this institutional bid demand. Think about that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. And I'll say this last thing and I'll shut up.
No, don't shut up, man. We won't have a podcast.
Well, to me, the most important part of signal right now is not that the price has gone down. Mm-hmm. It's that the bid that's there. People forget there's two sides of the trade, right? Mm-hmm. So we're seeing billions and billions and billions of dollars worth of Bitcoin rotate. Mm-hmm. People forget. There are buyers that are buying all of this Bitcoin at 100K plus per coin. Mm-hmm. That is a huge amount of demand. And that to me actually is the signal. That's mind blowing to me.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting thought.
Earlier this week or maybe late last week, but just last month, I believe it was 400,000 Bitcoin changed hands.
Yeah.
And we're
That's kind of crazy.
Sitting at
That's kind of crazy.
103, almost 104. Wow. And yeah, I personally also think that the 4-year cycle is done. We're in a,
so you're saying 400,000 Bitcoin chain. People always ask the question, sorry to interrupt you, but I want to just throw this thought out here. People always talk about like, what if Satoshi decides to wake, what if he comes back and sells all his Bitcoin? It's like a million Bitcoin. So like you just said, 400,000 Bitcoin changed hands and like the price went down, yeah. You know, whatever it did, it's already kind 40, of recovered.
40 billion.
Yeah. I mean, it's like. But no, Satoshi came and decided to just sell all that Bitcoin. Obviously, there'd be like a temporary crash in the market, but that institutional bid and demand is there that it would probably gobble that up. Maybe there'd be a 20-30% crash, but it he could only do that one time and it would be gobbled up and you know, now redistributed to everybody on Earth.
Yeah, even
fascinating.
Yeah, I think someone mentioned this to Sailor yesterday too. And like personally, like I could care less of those coins ever.
No, for sure. I feel the same way.
Yeah. But yeah, and I think now, though, like I said, personally, I think we're in a new era, but I think people are trying to time it because they do think that like, oh, nothing has changed. We're still in the 4-year cycle. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I think it's a mix of a few things where like there's a lot of uncertainty right now with the government shutdown. Mm-hmm. Markets do not like that. You have like these people that
think I don't know
that,
why.
Well, yeah.
I mean, that should shut down.
Yeah, especially because it doesn't even seem like anything is really changing.
I didn't even notice. I mean, it's like, what has changed? What is going on?
Funny thing too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's insane. The government is shut down and what has changed?
You want to know something funny?
Probably.
When I was in D.C., I guess the government shutdown like started and like I never go to D.C. I never like do anything, right? So I'm like, I go to speak at this BTC and D.C. conference and like been paying taxes my whole life. Yep. All this shit. And then the one fucking time I go to DC, I'm like, oh, I want to go visit a fucking monument. Oh, the government shut down.
I forgot.
The one possible thing that I could like really use my tax dollars for that, like instead of like blowing people up and fucking building $5 billion jets and spending $100 million to fire a fucking missile at a balloon out of the sky or whatever. The one time it's like, oh, nope, sorry. You can't visit the monument today. The government shut down. So I'm like, oh, okay. All right. Well,
it's funny.
Hope I never have to pay taxes again, but I don't think that's happening.
Well, they've talked about it, you know, you got to wonder, you know, if
I think they should use this tariff revenue. It's a tax, whatever, prices go up a little bit, you know, say we have a little bit. I mean, use that revenue, tax everybody that way and get rid of the personal income tax.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's how America was for the first like 200 years. And it was like the most prosperous country on Earth, the Gilded Age, all that stuff. I mean, so I think that's the playbook.
Yeah, income tax is absolute robbery. And you should see I live in Canada and it's insane. I mean, almost half of your income goes to tax and then you're taxed with your spending dollars as well. So what is your actual take home? And then you look at what the government is actually spending our money on.
It's so like, much worse than you even think.
Stifling. You're not spending on innovation. You're not truthfully spending on the people. You're just wasting all of our hearts.
The fraud. Did you guys listen to Rogan and Elon's podcast recently? Oh, it's so good. I mean, he just breaks down the grift.
They've done another one.
No, that's what I'm talking about. The one they just came out with. Like, oh, they did another one in the past.
No, week? I'm asking.
Oh, this is like a week old. It is so good.
Last Friday or something.
Yeah, like last Friday. Like he explains like, oh, it's so good. You got to listen to it. He just breaks down the grift of what he dealt with Doge and how much money is being stolen. And it's like, it's just unbelievable, like the amount of the breadth of the fraud, corruption, grift and stuff that's happening, the wasted money, how many people are, you know, the Cantillon effect, obviously, at the money spigots, just sucking on all this money and just wasting it and, you know, paying stuff for years on end and nobody knows what the hell the money's going. It's just they don't have to even account for it or answer for it. I mean, it's just the breadth of fiat corruption that's occurring. And we're still like America's still the most powerful country on Earth. And somehow this is still all being allowed to happen. Crazy.
Yeah.
It kind of blows your mind. And it's like, take that orange fucking pill, you know, take that orange pill. And you really kind of like, I think I had a post about it. People are like, so inside this window and you know, you're stuck in this cage. It's like that Matrix moment with the blue and the red pill. It's like, when you take that red pill about Bitcoin, it's like, holy shit, you learn. So there's so much other stuff happening. That's like,
yeah.
How did I believe half this shit?
Yeah. And I think something that's super, super important, especially for younger people is that like, there is hope. Like study Bitcoin. There is hope. Like there is hope. Like a lot of people who are younger and maybe they don't make that much money and they're just looking at the system going, this whole thing is a scam. Mm-hmm. Like I can't even believe like, you know, the American dream. Like I'm supposed to buy a house. I'm really?
That's all.
Well, they fucked up the money. That's, you know, yeah, that's like same here.
This is just not like, I think a lot of people are like this. How is this even going to work? I can barely buy groceries. I can't afford my rent. Like, how is that supposed to work? Right. I've got like, you know, X number of hundreds of thousands of dollars of student loan debt.
Yeah. That's what baffles me is like, we have like protests or like riots about every other like human right issue, but never about taxation.
I mean, it's, I mean, you know, I think, I can't remember who said it, but it's like inflation is this tax that's stolen in the death of night and nobody understands it. Like nobody realizes what's happening. Very few people really understand
it. It's because of the compounding function. Like the math thing with compounding is very difficult to understand.
Yeah.
Like Einstein talked about it. It's like, well,
the seventh order of the world.
Yeah. It's very difficult for people to wrap their minds around. Mm-hmm.
And once you've compounded away that opportunity cost, that theft that occurs for so long, it's like Roger Ver actually does a great job of like explaining this. You know, he's very radical, but he kind of like, it's pretty cool how he like breaks down and like makes you think outside the box when it comes to taxation and actually all the harm that it's doing in more ways.
The thing to keep in mind for, again, back to the solution and back to having hope is that if you just earn as much fiat as you can, reduce your expenses as much as possible, you create as much delta as you possibly can between your income and your expenses. You take all the difference, you plow it into Bitcoin at a 30% ish compound annual growth rate every single year. You can actually figure out a way to eject and achieve what I call financial escape velocity from the system.
Yeah.
The whole thing is essentially, the whole system is, I'm not trying to be doomer or make anybody depressed, but it's designed in a way that makes it very difficult to escape. And Bitcoin is a real way that you can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. There is hope for those people. And the first step that everybody needs to take is just literally just start educating themselves and remember that there is a pristine savings tool available to all of us. And you just have to take the steps and educate yourself. There are so many different amazing people to be learning from in the space itself. And then make sure that when you're buying your Bitcoin, that you're not leaving it on an exchange so that there's risk of theft, because how heartbreaking would it be if you finally found a way to set yourself up for success in the future and then something happened with the exchange and all of your wealth was lost?
Yeah.
And there's
any closing thoughts here, Riley?
Well, and
I know you guys got to go soon, so.
And kind of extending on this too, there's a critical thinking issue as well with the majority of people. And that is just because they just went through.
Oh yeah. It's designed to,
yeah, that is
to brainwash you, really. Yeah.
Yeah. To brainwash you. Mm-hmm. And so it's then therefore harder for people to go through the rewiring. And it's like you start to go down that path where if you are a critical thinker, like everyone in this room, it's much easier to start going down that path. But then for some people, like kind of in the middle, it's like you might start to go down the path, but then you struggle with the fact that you've been lied to your entire life. And you would rather just stop there and look the other way and think that everything is just still perfectly fine. And then you have the other people that just have zero ability to think for themselves. They just consume everything that the media tells them. And like, that is like their perception of the world.
Take the orange pill, guys. That's the closing thought here. Why doesn't everybody tell our audience where they can find you, and we'll close out here.
Yeah, LinkedIn, Riley Combs, X, Twitter, BTC, or BT Combs 11.
You can find me on LinkedIn, Chantel Lillycrop, and on Twitter, X, Telly Bitcoin.
Alex Stanzik on Twitter, X. People are like, it's not Twitter anymore. and then also the Bitcoin Crucible on Rumble.
Perfect.
At Matty I Sensei on X. And thank you guys so much for coming today. It's been an absolute pleasure. And thanks for everybody for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.